Welcome to Unsigned 518. I am here with Jay Brown of Starling Studio. How's it going, man?
It's going well. How about you?
Fantastic. You know, and we, well, I mean, I guess we just met like 5 minutes ago, but we also just realized that we used to work for the same person a couple doors down from each other on Broadway in Saratoga. A long time ago.
Long time ago, yeah. Talking early, 2011, yeah. 2012, something
yeah,
like that.
Probably yeah, probably something like yeah, that, yeah.
I think it was... You know, I didn't mention it, but I was also an intern at EQX in 2000, but I think that was right before you were there.
Yeah, because I was there in like I said, it was at least late 2001, but I think 2002 to 5.
I wasn't a good intern, but I was an intern.
So, what we want to talk about is you know, obviously you have the studios, you're a producer, you've started with music, you're now doing podcasts, but it's right here in, where is the studio actually?
Right in town, right in Saratoga. Right, it's a home studio, so I gutted my basement when I bought the house in 2014, and that's where it's been. But it's a nice setup. Yeah, I'm able to do, you know, I think I've done a 5-piece band live.
Nice.
Which was an adventure, but it came out well.
So I guess what we should do is just go back to kind of how, you know, your journey, like in any way that you want to tell it. I always tell my guests, like, this is your episode, and I'm just like, you know, keeping things in line or whatever, but
yeah,
like,
sure.
So just tell the story of like kind of how we got to where we are now,
yeah,
in the way you want to tell it.
Yeah. I grew up in Saratoga. I went to Skidmore College. My father teaches at Skidmore, so that was a nice financial advantage to have. And after Skidmore, I moved to New York, and the singer of the band that I was in at Skidmore was in a band in New York. And they lost their bass player, and I ended up joining that band, and that's what I did for about 8 years down there. And at first, it was just kind of the weekend warrior kind of stuff. We'd have a couple of gigs in New York. We're all working day jobs, but we were able to kind of build an audience, and eventually we're selling out places like CBGB on a regular basis.
Oh, no, so shit.
Pretty cool to be able to play there. And eventually, this is a very fast track story, obviously. Eventually, we signed with an independent record label and were able to tour full time. So that's what we did for about 2.5 years, my last couple of years down there. And as most stories go, we did not make the millions that we thought we might.
Right.
So I said, well, what am I going to do? Let's move back to Saratoga and kind of regroup and then maybe move to LA, maybe, you know, Nashville, see what happens. That was 2009. I'm still here as things go. But what I did in 2009 was I had a little bit of engineering background from the band days. I was in a lot of cool studios, worked at Avatar, or didn't work at Avatar, but recorded at Avatar, some other places, worked with some big producers. So had a pretty good mind for the production side of things. As far as the technical side of things, I knew absolutely nothing. So I spent 6 months teaching myself Pro Tools, and literally had a book and a laptop with an early version of Pro Tools on it, and did that, did not leave my house for 6 months, and started recording stuff, and ended up being able to put together some really good recordings, and studied mixing and all this stuff. And actually, one of our mutual friends, Dave Tayo, this is where he kind of comes in. I had some stuff recorded, and I was researching recording schools, and I got in touch with him because I saw that he was teaching, and we ended up having a bunch of mutual friends. I actually didn't know him in high school somehow,
really?
Which is funny, even though we were a year or two apart. And he listened to some of my stuff, and long story short, was like, I don't think you need to take this class. Do you want to teach instead?
So you learned a thing or two.
So So I started teaching. But that wasn't until about 2013 or 14. During the time from 2009 on, I was kind of developing a roster of clients, recording. I did work at Circus Cafe. I was waiting tables and bartending. And for anyone that knows Circus Cafe back in the day, it was kind of a hub of musicians.
Yes.
And a lot of young talent. And a lot of those people are
and
still
great open mics.
Today. And great open
holy
mics.
Holy shit.
Shout out to Nate Solomon for running one of the best open mics Saratoga has seen.
Yeah.
I'm still good friends with Nate. But his band, 13-4, was one of the ones I worked with, and started working with you know, some of the guys that are now in North and South Dakotas, and Party Boat, and Mary Lee Ruin, and just a lot of different people who, at that time, were kind of the town's, you know,
Yeah, and I mean, that's when I lived in downtown Saratoga as well. So like all those days, I'm like, I remember those days when like, you know, like I remember Nate's open mics. And I talked to Nate not that long ago, a couple weeks ago. Like,
Yeah. I see Nate all the time. His daughter is good friends with my daughter. So
nice.
Yeah. So I ended up teaching at the New School for a good amount of time while still doing a lot of recording on the side. I eventually moved on to teach at Schenectady Community College. I was there for almost 6 years teaching, and I did start a digital program there teaching Ableton, which was something they didn't have. But I put together the curriculum for that, and then in addition to just the basic audio engineering courses at Schenectady, was teaching digital music, which was a lot of fun and something that students were really, really into. And I think a lot of places kind of overlook the fact that, yes, digital music is actually a way to make music.
Right. And like one thing that like people may not understand, you know, I was saying, you know, I don't know the stuff that you're talking about. I don't know how to do it. Like I always compare it to like having a jet and being like, yes, I have this jet, but like, I don't know how to even to start it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, it's an art form in itself. And I think sometimes like musicians take for granted what a good producer will be able to do with their stuff. You know what I mean? Because like I hear producers talking about like the different levels and, you know, like how it sounds here. And well, you got to listen to how it sounds in the car and how it sounds coming out of headphones and how it sounds coming out of that.
Yeah.
And, like, so I guess what I'm trying to say is how do you learn that? Like something that relies so heavily on an ear, you know? Like,
yeah. I think a lot of it you kind of either have or you don't as far as the ear part of things. I do think that there are ways to learn what you're hearing to say, all right, there, that is really too bassy. That's one way of saying it. But the other way of saying it is, okay, we need to cut a certain frequency out of the bass or even simply lower the bass. So that we can hear the other things that are happening, or the vocals are getting drowned out. Maybe it doesn't mean turn the vocals up. It means let's turn a bunch of other stuff down so you can actually hear the vocals. And that's the kind of stuff that I think when you're teaching, that's mostly what you're relying on, scooping out certain frequencies so the vocal isn't competing with the guitars or with the snare drum or things like that. But I do think having an ear for that, sometimes you either have it or you don't. There are ways to teach it. I do think the more that people are doing this on their own, people are developing an ear in a way. I think the more music you listen to and the more kind of, you know, even YouTube videos and things, I think if you're able to see people break down how they put things together, you can start listening to songs and hear those techniques that different mixing engineers are using or different producers are using. Okay. And that's a big part of the teaching as well, listening to things and saying, okay, tell me what's happening in verse two that was different than in verse one. And what I did this all the time at Schenectady, and people were like, are we seriously listening to this song? And I'm like, yes, because it's one of the best produced songs in the last like 20 years. And it's Teenage Dream by Katy Perry. I think it's so freaking good. For a lot of reasons. I think the melodies are just great, but the production, I'm like, all right, what just happened there? And they're like, another kick drum came in? Yes, that's right. They added another kick drum. So now the kick is bigger. A snare drum. Yes, all of a sudden the snare drum is wide now. And before it was a small filtered snare drum. There's a harmony that wasn't there before. There's a new keyboard line that comes in halfway through the chorus. And so things like that. And that's more the production ideas over like the mixing techniques.
Right. Yeah. Cause like Dave Tayo, again, like, you know, he's done my band songs and like he's helped with the arrangement. Cause like we give him like, you know, our songs and he'll be like, kind of like the same, like, I don't know if you saw my eyes widen when you said that, like kind of the same thing. He's like, well, you know, you got to do something different in verse two.
Yeah.
You know, there has to be something.
Something has to happen.
Something. Yeah, totally. Like, is it going to be like some hand claps? Is it going to be some oohs and ahs? What's it going to be?
Exactly.
And like, so, yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. And like, I don't know. I mean, pop songs are pop songs for a reason. That's because like they've got that. Like, I guess like that formula, you know,
and this was something I really tried to drive home teaching was that these pop songs that people just write off
Right.
weren't just written in 3 minutes and put out. Some of them took a year.
Right.
And there's a New York Times article that focuses on that song, The Middle, with Maren Morris, who's the singer. Baby, why can't you just meet me in the middle?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not very hip.
I'll send you the video afterwards. Cool. You can put it in the notes or something. But they break down how this song got to be such a smash hit. It took over a year. And part of it was that they couldn't find a vocalist to actually sing it better than the young woman that actually wrote that song. Oh, but wow. She's not a performer. And she's like, I'm not going to sing it. So
and does that happen a lot where like... You know, people will write a song with no intention of, you know,
someone, who it's going to.
Yeah sure. Just being absolutely. Like, I'm writing it and then we'll figure it out who's
absolutely.
Gonna.
Yeah. And there's a great podcast called And the Writer Is, for anybody that's interested in the writing aspect of music. It's hosted by Ross Golan, who is a huge songwriter. And he actually wrote, this is one of my favorite writing stories. He wrote My House by... welcome to my house. This is, it's like a huge party song. Flo Rida, that's who it is.
Oh, okay.
And Ross Golan
is
this like
hip.
Bearded white hippie dude. And he wrote it on an acoustic guitar. And the whole song is about how him and his wife hate going out because they're so antisocial. And the song gets to Flo Rida. And it's this huge, massive party song. So
wow. That's funny. I mean, I don't know. I just think it's interesting how things like that happen. And like, like back in like the, I don't know, 50s and 60s with like the Wrecking Crew, how totally. Like you'd have this, you know, this crew of people that were like basically making all of the music for other people.
For other people. Like, absolutely. Yeah.
And it's funny that that still happens. It
still happens. It's still writers. I know a lot of people in LA who are really big writers, and actually an old, one of the first clients I had in Saratoga, she was 16 at the time, and now she's in LA and is writing some really big songs. It's pretty cool to see.
Wow. That's such a, I don't know, such a neat industry, you know, because I mean, the writing part, if you have that in you, it could certainly be different from performing.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
definitely.
And I wonder if that's like where like the singer-songwriter term came from, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're like, oh, no, they can actually sing too. Like, they can write songs. And then they sing them.
We need
it's amazing.
A singer to this.
Yeah. Like, oh no, I can do it myself. You know, they're like, "What?
Yeah,
that's fucking
guitar.
Crazy." You know? So then, you know, you've been like at that point when you were first starting with, you know, like going back to like 2011, 12, like the early days.
Yeah.
What were you using like for equipment, like compared to what you have now? Is it basically?
I had an interface. I was using Pro Tools, so I think I had 8 channels to record at once, which you can get a lot done with 8 channels. You
know, yep.
You can, maybe not for a whole band, but you can get enough done. So I was using that for a long time. I did buy some nice microphones working at Circus Cafe. It was a pretty busy place, so I was able to use a lot of that money to buy some of the first recording gear that I had and that I still have, especially a lot of the microphones. I did eventually start upgrading stuff as it went on, different interface, and I think I have 32 channels of recording now, and it's all digital. It's, you know, it's all right. This, it's crazy. There's just an interface, and that's how you're controlling the gain. I don't have any knobs anymore. It's all just on my screen, for better or worse. I mean, knobs are a lot easier, I'll tell you that. You can turn, you know, a couple of them at once rather than trying to
right.
navigate through your computer to find a digital knob. But so gear-wise, things just kind of progressed as needed. You know, monitoring for musicians that were going to be there, things like that. So, yeah.
And now, I mean, you said you gutted a section of your house, like you've
yeah.
got a decent sized yep. space for like.
Yep. So I've got a pretty good live room. I usually put, if there's a drummer, I usually put the drums in the live room. It's really well treated. They actually sound great. It's a pretty small room, but gets the job done. Nice control room. Again, I have done a 5-piece band live. It was bass direct, vocals were in the room with me, drums in the other room, and then an ISO booth for a guitar, and then my actual basement for the other guitar. And so everyone tracked live, and yeah, it came out great. The isolation was good, and so yeah.
Now I have a question. I saw this video on, I think it was like on Instagram or something, and they were tracking drums and they were doing it without any cymbals.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, they're miming that they're hitting cymbals yeah. and just getting the bass and the toms and yep. the snares. And yep. then they went back through mimed hitting the bass and the toms and the snares and just hit the cymbals.
Yeah.
And when I was first watching the videos, I thought they were kidding. And then I was like, you know, someone comment, oh, yeah, that's how Dave Grohl did, you know, the Queens of the Stone.
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck? So what the fuck?
I haven't done that, but I know that's a big technique. And the reason is because cymbals take up so much sonic space. So they're bleeding into all the other mics. If you can just get your kick and snare and have those clean as fuck, then adding the cymbals in later, you're going to have a much cleaner sound.
So gotcha. So like, even though it would be like the bass mic, you would clearly still hear the cymbal in there.
You'd still hear the cymbals, yeah. And definitely in the snare. You know, yeah. Especially with like a hi-hat right there.
And how do you, but I mean, how would you work to pull that out, or do you not pull that out?
Usually you don't. I mean, depending on the sound you're going for, you know, I mean, you can use something like a gate or editing to get rid of actual bleed within the mix, but usually you want everything in the overheads and, you know, to have more of that live sound. But for a lot of like metal stuff, that really tight,
right.
Was it that kind of music that they were doing that on? Do you know?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't, because it there was no music with it. It was just like the drum.
And it also makes editing a lot easier if you just have the kick and snare. You know, if you're going to actually lock everything to a grid after the drummer performs
that. And I didn't even think of that, like for the gate, you know, like with some of the like, like the sharp, like.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So outside of doing music, and I'm just rolling into this just because, like, you know, I'm a podcaster, and I didn't realize that you did podcasting now until like, I don't know, 20 minutes before you got here when I was like looking through Instagram. But I was like, oh, shit. Like, you know, like I could probably learn a thing or two about this thing that I'm just like, you know, I mean, I'm shooting from the hip in every sense of the term.
Well, so. I mean, what's funny about you saying that is that so was I and so am I with everything I do. And basically it went from music to starting to do some more video type stuff, audio for videos, just some commercials with local filmmakers that I know. And that kind of led to a whole nother area where I'm like, wow, I can actually make more money and they're actually going to pay me, as opposed to some of the musicians out there. No offense to anyone. But, and it's far less time, and hey, I don't have to have a lot of people in my house over and over. That's right. The one disadvantage of having a home recording studio, by the way.
Yeah.
But that just kind of started leading to other things, started leading to some film stuff. And the podcast stuff started, I have to give a shout out to my ex-wife, Janelle, because she said, I want a podcast and you're going to do it. And I said, okay. And so we started doing a podcast. Her podcast was called Tell Me Everything. And she just had guests on who had interesting stories, and she interviewed them, and she did a great job. And I edited it and mixed it and put it out. I wrote all the music for it and figured out how to get it out on all the platforms and everything like that. And so that was the first real podcast that I actually did. Before that, I had also started doing a lot of audiobook editing for Simon & Schuster, and that was through a friend of mine who has been doing this for about 20 years, a friend from Skidmore, and she is actually a producer at Simon & Schuster. And after bothering her for long enough, she finally gave me a chance to start editing. So I've done a lot of editing of audiobooks for Simon & Schuster. And the reason I'm mentioning that is because all of these things start to add up into a certain skill set, which eventually gets me to where I am now. But during that time, I started doing some other films as well. Last year, I did a film for Angie of Every Falling Sparrow. Every Falling Sparrow, I think that's correct. Let me say that again. Of Every Falling Sparrow. It was called The Double Walker. Some of the guys from Chromoscope shot it. Angie was the director and writer. And I did all the sound design and mix for that and all the Foley. And that was an awesome, awesome project to work on. I did all the music and on-set sound and mix for a much longer movie last year called The Art Show, which unfortunately might not see the light of day at this point, but it was a fun project to work on. And so the podcast thing, I was working on Janelle's podcast. I said, you know what? This is actually pretty fun. And again, it's just one person. They can come in, they can record, maybe a guest. They leave, I edit it. And so I started doing more. I did one called Cancer Confidential, which was a musician locally who survived like stage 4 pancreatic cancer somehow. So the whole podcast was about that. And actually, let me rephrase that. It was prostate cancer, not pancreatic. Started working with a local woman named Martel on a podcast that we did 2 seasons for called Beyond My Battle, which was all about invisible illnesses. And so I've started just getting my editing down really well for this. And, you know, I mean, there's not a ton that goes into podcasts other than having the content, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, and that's why, and it's so funny because sometimes people like, you know, because radio stations, you know, famously have a full working staffs and, you know, yeah, big staffs. And people will always be like, well, how many people work on your podcast? I'm like, it's just me.
Yeah.
Like, it's just me. I schedule everything. I record everything. I edit everything. Yeah. I post everything to all the platforms. Yeah. And it, other than like what we're doing here, like, this is not the hard part, but this is the, like, you know, once you have the content.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I think it's like, I love just like sitting down and editing audio. Like,
yeah.
Like, and I'm not like on the music side of things. Like, I don't have that skill like on Pro Tools, but like, I even use just like Audacity, the free thing.
Oh, sure.
Like, you know, I'm like, I just need this simple.
Yep.
You know, I have sometimes 4 tracks
yep.
of people talking, and I literally am happy doing it for like 11 hours in a day, just sitting in here, just like, and I'll do like 6 weeks worth of episodes in one shot.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, so you're right. It doesn't take a lot. So anybody listening that wants to do podcasts, like, it's all you need is the ability to do this, to gather content, and then you package it and put it out.
And that's like, why there are so many podcasts right now.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously the pandemic was a lot of podcasts came out of the pandemic, and a lot of new technology came out of the pandemic as well. So I know my timeline has gotten thrown off here, but during this time of podcasting and doing some of the film stuff, I was in the park with my then, I don't know, 5-year-old daughter. And she started playing with another little girl. And out of the shadows emerged a person who started talking to me, who was the father of the other child. And I realized it was a friend of mine from high school that I hadn't seen in 20 years. He moved to Tanzania, Africa, after college, and runs a PR company. And we were talking, I don't know, for about 10 minutes, because we both had to run. And he said, what are you doing? And I said, oh, I have a recording studio. I do a lot of podcasting. And he said, you do? Do you want to come to Tanzania and train my audio team on podcasting? And I said, yeah, sure. Yeah, no problem. Whatever. We'll see if that happens. He called me the next day and said, so can you leave in 2 weeks? And I said, yep.
Wow. Man, I don't.
And so I flew to Tanzania.
I get free stickers every once in a while, like from bands and shit.
it was the same thing. I think I might have gotten a sticker while I was over there. Yeah.
Wow, that's fucking amazing.
So I put together a week-long crash course in podcasting for the audio team of this media company in Tanzania. And it was an amazing experience. They ended up launching several podcasts that are doing really well as far as national attention right now over there. And then I went back the following year to do a similar thing, but to get them more trained on like field recording and then doing their commercials, because they put out a lot of television commercials. That also led me to doing a lot of the sound design and mixing for television commercials that air in Tanzania, like Kilimanjaro, Lager, Safari Lager, all these clever names for Tanzania. That eventually led to one of the bigger projects that I've been doing for the last 4 years, which is all the music and sound design and mix for a children's TV show out of Tanzania, which airs in about 20 countries right now. Wow. So, that's been a really, really fun project to work on. And we're going into season 4 with that right now.
And like, how do you find, you know, getting listens in like, you know, cause obviously that's why we're trying to get ears, you know, get people to listen. And it's hard. Like, I just launched a third show that is like this, but on a national level, where mm-hmm. like bands will call in from, you know, I had Cincinnati, Detroit, and like all these like places, and I made it like its own page, yep. and you know, created like this new show.
Yep.
I was like all excited and like talked about it for months, built it up, and when I launched it, it like didn't get any listens. Whereas like, you know, my normal show gets listens and
yeah.
like it gets seen. If I upload it, it gets uploaded immediately. Like I could, you know, we could end an episode. I could take 10 minutes to upload or edit it and upload it to Spotify and it would yeah. show up on your phone immediately.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this, it wasn't showing up. So I just rolled it into like, it was the first episode. So I just took it and basically rolled it into Unsigned 518.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I'm releasing it now under that umbrella with
yeah.
it, and it immediately got
a lot more listens. Well, you're like, on episode what, like 120 of
this will be like 136 right? or 7 on regular episodes,
yeah.
but if you
yeah.
count up the weekend spotlight episodes and special episodes, I think I'm on 160 something.
Yeah. I mean, obviously the longer you're around, the bigger your listener base is going to be.
Right.
So if you launch something brand new, then everyone's going to be
but
like,
but it just like, you know? In my head, I was just thinking, ah, it's me, you know, the,
yeah.
like
yeah.
my audience will go here and listen.
Yeah.
And they didn't,
yeah.
you
yeah.
know, and they didn't. But like now that I'm like, oh, like put it there. So I guess it kind of brings me around to like, I've, you know, cause not only do I not make money on the podcast, but it cost me money, you know what I mean?
yeah.
Like it cost me like a monthly fee and
sure.
a shitload of time to do it, but
yeah.
like I've had ideas of like, you know, a sponsorship or like monetizing
yeah.
or I mean, how would you, just for my own interest and whoever else is listening, how would
yeah.
you suggest somebody makes that step? And do you think it's worth it to take that step, to take something that I love, my hobby, and to like turn it into a revenue stream? Would that be, you know?
I think it definitely is, especially when you've done this many episodes. And I don't know what your listener base is number wise, but I think starting with local sponsors is a great idea. And I think the technology for podcast hosting these days is pretty solid. I mean, the show, we haven't talked about the show I work on right now that I've been on for 2 years. It's definitely a different story, as it's already very established. But rather than just using, how are you uploading your shows? What are you using as your hosting?
Castos.
Okay. And do they have an ad option?
Yes.
Where you get dynamic
they
ads?
They do.
And do you need to hit a certain listener count for those to kick
I
in?
Haven't really looked into it, because the way I understood it is it was like they'll embed an ad in the
yeah.
beginning and the end.
Yes.
And like kind of in my head, I was like, you know, it wouldn't be worth it because I don't have like tens of thousands of.
If you have that option, I would say to definitely do it. And that's yeah. where the dynamic advertising comes in. It's going to be something that doesn't stay there the whole time. So if someone listens to the episode, you know, 2 months from now, that ad will be different than it is today. Right. And that's the whole idea of dynamic versus baked in ads. But if you get local ads and start charging whatever per episode, I mean, I don't know, Parkway Music and other people that.
That's the
know,
one that
do,
that's
do
the
wanna,
one that I thought of, because
you
like,
want to give me $500
right.
per episode to give a shout out to Parkway and talk about some gear that you've bought there. You know, I mean, those are the types of things that I think when you don't have a huge listener base, I think those are the ways to start getting those sponsorships. And I know local podcasts that do this as well. And you might not even realize that they're doing these paid ads because they're also host Red, where they're just
right,
like
right,
talking
right,
about
right,
something.
Right.
Hey,
it's not going to be a, we'll be right back after
yeah,
these messages.
Exactly.
And then some like jingle.
Yeah, you just
it
start
be
talking.
Like, hey,
it was
you know,
a
by the way,
the other day. Yeah. And, you know, just like you hear any of the
and
DJs.
Like Parkway,
doing.
Like Parkway to me, like would make, like since I've started this podcast, I'm like, that's the one that makes the most sense, because
yeah.
my listeners are musicians.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah.
you know, musician, local musicians,
yeah.
a lot of them shop at Parkway. And
yeah.
like, and if they don't, they,
yeah.
you know, they could get them in there.
Yeah. And then as far as listener base, I mean, having all of your guests share
right.
the show and just keep growing that base.
Yeah, and it does, know? Like, that's the other thing, too, the nature of the show, even though it's, like, slowly at times, like, it does grow. My listeners grow every week.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, the engagement on social grows every week.
Yeah.
And followers grows every week because,
yep.
you know, I am doing this to help the bands get the word out.
Yeah.
And in getting their word out, like, I, you know, get a little bit of it as well.
Yeah.
Know, like,
yeah.
But
yeah, absolutely. And bigger guests, you know, I mean, your idea of going with national artists, I think, is great. So what made you do that as a separate pod instead of this?
Well, the way it started was I made this reel, like my band was on this show called Our Band Show out of Poughkeepsie.
Yeah.
And it's a video show, and the band goes down and like they do interviews, and like the band plays like 8 or 9 songs. We were there for the whole day. And on it, you know, they asked me about Unsigned 518. And so I'm standing there on the show, you know, I've got my bass guitar, I'm like dressed in my orange Misfit shirt. I'm like, and I'm talking about this show, but it was on their TV set, you know, like a working TV set, not a fucking garage like we're in here.
Yeah.
And there was a clip of me talking and saying like, oh, you know, the way the show works is, you know, someone reaches out and says, hey, I'd like to be on the show. And I say, yeah, come on, you know, no problem, be on the show. And I took a clip of that and made an Instagram reel with it. And like in my head, I'm thinking, all right, you know, here to the, you know, 500 or 600 people that, you know, are right here in Albany, this is my message to you. And somehow it caught like some algorithm or something, and it blew the fuck up. Like it's about to hit 100,000 views.
Holy shit.
And yeah, it blew up, but it was annoying as shit because like everybody thought that like that TV studio was mine. and I was just telling them, yeah, come on out. I had people from like Northern Canada. I had a band from Sweden reach out, and like just like their understanding of how big the United States is, because they were like, yeah, you know, we're going to be in Los Angeles for like a month. Maybe we could swing by we'll and do up. Your show. And I'm like, what the fuck? And like, thousands of messages.
Wow.
And that was months ago. That was almost 2 months ago, and I still am getting message like, and so while I was annoyed to be like, I cannot accommodate what you are asking, like my audience is in the 518.
Yeah.
It made me think, well, I could just do a show that can accommodate people, you know, and just because I can just do it through my Zoom over the phone, plug my phone in, and and that's where I got the idea. And then I was like, because I think it just wasn't thinking. I was just like, you know, it's Unsigned 500, you know, I'm doing a new show, so I made it its own thing and put all this energy into, you know, creating its own.
Basically starting over.
Yeah, you know, that's like, yeah, and I yeah. and like yeah. I just like literally didn't even think about it until the episode aired, and I was like, oh my god, nobody fucking listened to it. And then my friends were being like, hey dude, that show isn't showing up on my you know, like, and then like days after, like some, you know, apps or like streaming services, it still wasn't showing up. And whereas Unsigned 518, I mean, I hit send on the computer, and it's on your phone in 90 seconds.
Yeah. I mean, the listener base shouldn't affect whether it shows up or not.
It did. Yeah. It like literally wasn't showing up.
Wow.
And I almost feel like it was like they were like trying to vet it before they released it or something, but it was weird. It just wasn't showing up anywhere. Yeah. Nobody could find it. And so
I don't know.
But a good thing it happened on episode one, because I just like was like, hey, I fucked up. Sorry. And then, you know, I was like, if you're listening to Unsigned 518, now you just get new episodes in your feed.
Yeah.
You don't have to do anything.
We're moving beyond the 518 part.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I just like changed the picture on the streaming thing. So it shows that it's three separate shows that are going to be in the feed. But
I mean, on the technology side of things, you know, you don't, if you're going to be doing remote podcasts, this is one amazing thing that came out of the pandemic is all these amazing podcast sites. And the one I use is Riverside, which records 4K video and 48K audio.
Castos has an integration with Riverside. Because when you like go to add a new episode, it says, do you want to like add a new episode or create one in Riverside?
Yep. So you don't need anything fancy to make really good looking video podcast these days. And I mean, that kind of leads to the whole conversation of AI as well, but because Riverside has an AI editor that's coming for my job.
Yeah.
So, and I've messed around with it, and you know what? It's not awful. It's not awful.
That's the thing, because sometimes I've used, because doing social media, like there's a lot of AI options.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
And using it for writing copy is like the worst idea anybody could ever fucking do, because it's not going to get the right information, like, at all.
Yeah.
And like my whole job is like information and like getting proper information out. So like, but like I've used it to like, ask questions and shit, you know. I'll be like, hey, like, what if I did this and this, and I wanted to find out how to make the sound of air traffic control chatter on Audacity.
Yeah.
And it like gave me a detailed list of all the settings to do to make it sound like aircraft chatter.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, totally. Yeah, totally.
Shit like that is wild. But
I just lost a voiceover job to AI.
No
my
way.
First official, like, no, we're going to use a fake voice. Wow.
Man, people can tell, dude. Like, I feel like I can. I feel like I can always tell that, like, uncanny valley sound
there's
of an AI
ad
voice.
That has been running in the ads of the show I work on right now. And the first time I heard it, I wasn't really paying attention. But then I realized all of the voices were AI generated. And the whole ad was for an AI generation advertising company. You don't even need copy.
Wow.
You send them, you just upload what your product is, what type of voice you want, what the copy should be, and they give you the full commercial with music ready to go.
Wow.
Not good.
Not good at all. Not good at all. Wow. Yeah. And I mean, I left radio like, I don't know, 15 or more years ago, like, and it was kind of like radio was dying, and it was like sat, and that was before like any of this AI shit.
Yeah.
Like,
it's
a nightmare.
Yeah. No, it's crazy. It's crazy.
So if people wanted to work with you, if they wanted to do a podcast, is it like that kind of thing? Like it's service where they say, hey, Jay, I have an idea for a podcast. What can we do? Like,
yes, definitely. And that's something that, so the last final part of my professional story to bring us up to date is that 2 years ago, I started doing all the audio production for a podcast called The Bulwark, which is a top 10 political podcast. So the last 2 years of my life has been political podcasting every single day. And we record an episode every day, and I edit it, and I put it out, and by 2:30 every day. So it's some kind of speed lightning speed editing. That's where all the audiobook editing came into play. It's been a very, very interesting job, needless to say, given the political climate of the country. But so it was a nice break from having people as clients. That probably came out kind of weird. But over the last couple of months, I've been like, all right, I've been sitting in my cave by myself long enough. It's time to start getting some interaction with people again. So I've been doing more mastering recently. And yes, the podcast thing is something that I am looking to get back into so I can help you produce. I can do all the mixing. We can do video. We can do just audio. Can help you upload, write music for you, whatever you need. Kind of a full service production house here in that regard. So yes.
That's fantastic. And how would someone get in touch with you?
Yes, people can get in touch with me. My website is starlingrecording.com, and there's a contact sheet on there. So go there and fill it out and hit me up.
Sweet. All right. Well, Jay Brown, Starling Studio, come by anytime. Like, I would love to have another chat. This is one of the longest uninterrupted conversations that I've had on Unsigned 518, and I almost feel like I could just keep going if I wasn't so goddamn hungry.
I can talk for a long time.
But yeah, no, seriously, like, let's stay in touch. I really like what you're doing, and like I always say, like, you know, I'm like a non-competitive person in almost every aspect of my life. And there's some people that might do something and kind of want nobody else to do it so that they can do the thing. But I'm like, I want everybody to podcast. Like when the podcast explosion happened, I was like, this is amazing. Like that's, you know, obviously I was kind of late to the game, but I did do a podcast. Actually, James Gascoigne, and Ben and Mary Lee were on it. as Party Boat, and this is in like 2011. I did, or no, 12. It would have been 12. 2012.
2012.
And I did a podcast, and it was just called the Scullin Podcast. And it was, there was no music ever on it. And then they came, like I had them come on, and it was the very first precursor to like to this show.
So, that's awesome. That's awesome. Did you play music that they had?
They played live.
Oh, they played live. Yeah, oh, cool.
In my living room. Yeah.
That's a, I mean, that's a setup to have right there. So that's good.
Yeah. That is wild. But yeah, so I think everybody should podcast. If you've got something to say, like,
I agree.
You know,
I agree.
Do
it's
a podcast
not,
about
it's not hard. And, you know, the downside of the pandemic is that people's expectations for good audio quality went way down. But that's good for a lot of other people who can just put whatever they want out now. And if it's good content, people will listen.
Yeah. And I, you know, obviously my audio could use improvement, but I feel like I'm in that nice middle ground. You know what I mean?
I think it sounds good. I've listened.
There's some podcasts that I listen to that I'm like, this is really good content, but I'm sorry. I just can't.
There's some bad stuff out there. Even on the charts, I listen to all the stuff that are kind of the competitors of the show I work on. And I'm like, this sounds like trash. What the fuck? Yeah.
I was on the charts, little old me on Apple
That's
Music.
Right. I think I saw that. What'd you get up to?
I made it up to on Apple Music Music Interviews.
Yeah.
Charts. Yeah. I was number 68.
That's great.
Yeah. And I was on it for, I've been on it a couple of times. Like probably 5 or 6 different weeks.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know.
That's great. That's great. You should definitely do the monetization.
Yeah. So. I think I might do that. All right. Well, Jay, again, thank you so much. That is Jay Brown of Starlink Studio. I am Andy Scullin. This is Unsigned 518. I'll see you on the road. Unsigned 518 is produced and hosted by me, Andy Scullin. New episodes are available every week wherever you stream podcasts. If you'd like to help support the show, please like and subscribe wherever you are listening. Or you could buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/unsigned518. If you would like to advertise on the show, send me an email at unsigned518@gmail.com. And to be a guest on the show, reach out to me through Instagram at unsigned518. Take care of one another, and I'll see you next week.